First sight of tape number two with Fred Sitzer. Okay, Fred, why don't you tell us a little bit about the follow-up at the end of War and some other things.
Okay, well, we were just talking about Battle of Bulge briefly, and I was just saying that the Battle of Bulge was more than Patton coming up from the south and relieving the 101st at Bastogne. That battlefront was almost 100 miles long, and there were about 50 or 60 divisions involved. In fact, at Bastogne now they have a great memorial, and it has a great memorial there showing all of the infantry divisions that were involved in that particular battle. And as I was mentioning about the role of the 30th, 30th was very active in thwarting the Battle of the Bulge and restoring some order on that front line. The monument there is something that one really should go visit if you ever get in that area. Very good, very, very educational in terms of what really happened at the Battle of the Bulge. I was saying we were talking about the effect of the war, the results before I got sidetracked there. But I think that the United States came out of World War I in great shape. Our economy was rebuilt. We came out as a world power. We went in it with the idea of trying to restore peace. We did that, and we did something that we had never, or nobody's really done before. Instead of conquering those nations, as some countries had done, for example, in World War I, we struck the losing country with a lot of debt to pay for the damages of the war. And they never did get a chance to rebuild their country. What we did in Japan and in Europe under the Marshall and MacArthur plan is we gave them enough money to rebuild their country so that they could be a successful country, and they have turned out to be the leaders in their particular areas as a result of the help that we gave them. And in so many cases, conquering countries will plunder other countries to take advantage of it. And I think that plus the dropping of the atomic bomb created kind of an atmosphere that, gee, if we ever get in a war and we use the atomic bomb, it might be the end of civilization. Because the destruction at Hiroshima and Nagasaki was just horrendous. So we did really have a lot of, we had some strife, of course, and I guess we always will have, but we had a period there of about 50 years of peace, peaceful nations, you might say. So from that standpoint of view, I think we have to admit that we did accomplish some things there, and that as far as our country was concerned, we came out of it in fine shape, and we've maintained that position since then, and I hope we can continue to do that. I guess what I received is there's no value put on it. I don't know how you say that, where you wouldn't take $1 million for a pertinent experience, but it's worth it. And I learned so many things about myself and about life in general that helped me tremendously as I got older and got into predicaments. I would always turn back to that World War II experience and say, Fred, you survive that, you can survive anything.
Make
all you
got
to do is pull it together and go forth. And that attitude helped me tremendously through my life. I also, it also gave me a career to follow, because I was shocked at the Hitler Youth Program, comparing to my own youth. And as I mentioned earlier, I did take advantage of GI Bill and did work for the Y for about 40 years, and I think I've been fortunate to influence the lives of thousands of kids.
What all things did you do working with the YMCA's then, and where
at? Well, I started out as a physical director.
Okay.
The YMCA is probably the top youth serving organization in the country. And it's become more than just the youth serving organization. It serves the entire family, and then it serves all age groups in both sexes. Earlier, it was primarily a men's organization, but that began to change in the 50s. And we worked primarily with people in all aspects of their lives. We had physical education programs. We had all kinds of informal education programs. Wherever we could be of service to people. Earlier in our history, YMCAs were like hotels where people coming from the country could come in and find a cheap place to live and live in a Christian atmosphere. It's a Christian organization, but it's not a denominational thing. You join the Y, you join the fellowship in, with Christ, Jesus Christ. And the activities and stuff that we offer are based on the spirit of good Christian principles. We don't have sermons we conduct meetings with prayer and close them and so on and so forth. But most of the programs are programs that people are interested in. Play a lot of heavy stuff in physical education, aquatics, any kind of activity, name it, we do it. We work at camping, boys camping programs. Aquatics is tremendous. The Red Cross program is basically followed the YMCA programs when they first started. The Boys and Girls Scouts programs are offshoots of the YMCA program, camp programs. The industrial the informal education programs were aimed at helping people come in, learn a language, help them to develop skills that they might come on. So you name it, and the Y can cover it in some manner.
When did they quit kind of running a dormitory or a place where you could go stay?
That happened pretty much in the 60s.
Yeah.
The advent of the drug culture.
Okay.
You had a lot of drifters coming in,
coming
into cities and looking for places to live, and the Y's had good facilities, and they were very reasonable. But we were getting too many problems in there, guys that were on drugs. And you're getting a lot of the cities that had dormitories in the big cities were downtown.
Yeah.
And the downtowns were being the white people were moving into the suburbs, the wealthy people were moving to the suburbs, the minorities were living in the inner cities. And then you began to having a lot of problem with inner city people coming in, and the cultures didn't cooperate too much there for a while. And so to eliminate some of the problems, they really didn't have a need to provide housing anymore, because the motels and hotels and stuff were taking care of that. And so they just eliminated buildings. In future building plans to have dormitories, and they open it up more with program opportunities such as G gymnasiums, swimming pools, health clubs, and stuff like that, program mm-hmm. facilities.
So I can remember a couple of times when I was young of going to a major city and we'd stay at the YMCA.
There still are a lot of them around too, but the trend now is to build the buildings with more program opportunities mm-hmm. rather than and living facilities.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's expensive too to upkeep, and so from financial and overall functional purpose, mm-hmm. they moved it out. They've actually done more now too for women and children.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten into the child care business as well, but they cover programs for all age groups. I hope the one here in Bozeman succeeds.
Because it's a great organization. Yeah, well, you started out at the physical ed, then what all the other kinds of assignments work?
Oh, I was basically a physical director. You had people working with programs. You had physical directors, you had youth workers, you had camp directors, you had dormitory sure. personnel and so on, and program people mm-hmm. who worked with the people. Naturally, mm-hmm. you have a chain of command. You have branch executives and mm-hmm. so on. And in my day, you'd stepped up to be a branch executive.
Yeah.
Nowadays, he's a CEO.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Chief executive officer, see.
Well,
I ended up my career with the Y in Toledo, Ohio, where I started first in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I worked there about 3 or 4 years while I was going to school on a part-time basis at the Lincoln Belmont Y.
Mm-hmm.
And my first job was in Janesville, Wisconsin, where mm-hmm. I was there for 3 years. Then I went to Toledo for 10 years as physical director,
mm-hmm.
had a great experience there. And then I went from there to Madison, Wisconsin as the executive of the central mm-hmm. branch in Madison until about 70. Yeah, it was about 73 or 4. And then Toledo invited me back to be the executive central branch there, mm-hmm. so I went back there. And then I got involved with the racquetball game.
Mm.
Familiar with racquetball?
I know how racquetball is played.
Well, you're looking at one of the founders of the game.
Is that right?
In 1967 or so, we started International Racquetball Committee, as you know it now.
Huh.
And we developed the first racquetball clubs, as you see them now. Mm-hmm. They're more or less glorified YMCAs.
Mm-hmm.
We built running tracks and racquetball courts with 10, 12 courts of glass, mm-hmm. and people come in and watch. We carpeted the places and put in nice locker rooms so that the women could come mm-hmm. in and play. And we put in swimming pools and we put in equipment that the people could work out. Most of the clubs you see around today are takeoffs mm-hmm. of these. So I finished my career working as a director of various racquetball clubs around the country.
That's amazing.
I retired in about 85, I think, 84, 85.
I know a lot of people talk about instances in their life that changed their life, but your observance and observing the Hitler Youth Program, really, that was the thing that decided where you were going to go.
Another interesting thing you talk about career is when I was moving the first time from Toledo to Madison, the guys in Toledo were saying, "Hey, don't go. You're 37. Your career's about over. You don't want to be going." What do people do now? They're changing careers at 50 and 60 years.
Yeah, that's right. So what?
We were ahead of our days.
You were ahead of it. Well, hey, Fred, anything else you want to comment?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to do this. First time I went over, and I knelt at the Colville Sur Mer Cemetery. I vowed that if I got a chance to talk about it,
you'll do it. And you have talked now in the last few years in several different settings with different groups, have you not?
Yes, I have. I am fortunate to talk to several colleges in Denver. I have talked to various school groups Ron. I talked to Bozeman High School. I've been to Dillon High School a couple of times. I've been around to a number of places, and every time I get a chance to talk, I'd be happy to do it. I've talked to church groups and groups that are interested, clubs, fraternal clubs and things, service clubs, and whatever. Whoever wants to listen.
Whoever wants to listen, that's
great. We'll give them the word.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Fred, for doing this, for this project, and your oral history will be recorded for posterity now. I'm just going to make one comment. You and I have crossed some mutual ground. About 10 years after you went through Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, for training, I went through there for training.
Yeah.
So.
That's we thought when we were training at Fort Leonard Wood that we were going to be the best outfit in the country because they were training us to do stuff that had never been done before.
Yeah, right.
And when they broke our unit outfit up, we were heartbroken.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we took our skills and went on with them.
Went on with them, good. Well, thanks. That completes the interview with Fred Zitzer here on July 20th, 2005. And thanks, Fred, again. And this is Charles Rust that worked with Fred, too. He did all the work. That's it.